Hello and welcome to another episode of Loose Cannon. We are back once again. Took a little week off there, and we're back. We're gonna read one of the current season lore books, season of the Wish lore books, called Dragon Slayers. Today, this is my first time reading it, mostly because it wasn't in the API. I can't stand reading through the game, and it's still not in the API, which is fucking baffling. We have our doc. We're just gonna read it and have a good time reading it. So we had some time off. How have you been?
Good. I'm almost done with the job site I've been working on forever. It's finally coming to a close, but the closer you get to the end, everything just, you know, it's the most tedious, you know, mind just, I don't know. It's just, it just gets chaotic. Everybody's, you know, in a hurry, fussing and irritated and getting on each other's nerves. It's like anything. When you're done and you don't want to be there anymore.
Yeah. I've never really had a job like that, so I can't really relate to the experience that you're in.
Well, you know? it's kind of like building something that it's like building IKEA furniture. Yeah, and then when you're done.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. Yeah, I get you there.
And then you're like, where do these bolts go that are still here in this package?
I have a funny story about that. I won't say it on show. If we have time, I'll tell you after.
Okay.
Have you been playing much? Let me ask you that before we really get started. Have you been playing much? I have not been playing.
I haven't been doing the activity at all. We've been playing Trials and Halo, of course, you know, every night. But yeah, I haven't done the activities at all since like maybe a month now.
Yeah, I haven't played since that last week that I got stuck on the what would be the exotic mission trying to do that solo.
Yeah,
I got stuck on that mission and it just burned me, and it was just like I have a hard time picking something back up that I put down. And
right,
it's like I know I need to do it before the season's over, but the season got extended, so like I just feel no ambition to play.
I think that's the thing with, you know, certain types of people, like maybe you and me, there's no like external motivation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, so you'll do it like at the very last minute.
Yeah. And I don't want to do it at the last minute because I have never missed a season, to rank 100. And this is like the first time that it's like, am I going to, like, oh shit,
right,
this is a little probably cutting it close. I should see when the season actually ends, because maybe it ends in March and that'd be embarrassing.
I just saw this morning, I think we're at 100 days now until
100 days.
Oh, yeah, man.
Well, the good news is, you know, I'm sure I'll be more amped to play once I do get, and let me check really quick, once I get my collector's edition, I'm sure that will get me a little more amped.
Yeah, to play. Yeah, that'll kickstart you.
Yeah, and still nothing for me. I don't know if you got anything about it, because I know it's like in the shipping phase where it's like it goes from the manufacturer to their distribution center to actually shipping, and it's so it should be soon is all I know.
Right. I know. It's they're better about it than, you know, like ordering stuff from, I don't know, China or something. You know, it ships out and then you don't hear from it for like months.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
all of
exactly.
You get a notification from some weird parcel company that it's here.
Yeah. Once it's in their hands and it's on its way, we'll know. It's just the matter of when are they going to get it? Because they're supposed to be getting it.
Exactly.
I have to figure out where I'm going to put it. I kind of did like a renovation. You can't see this wall over here, but I added a couch, a little single seat couch there, and a TV on the wall. So like when I'm just like goofing off and stuff, my wife can just hang out in the room with me. And
Ooh, baller.
yeah, it was something that we wanted to do for a while, but adding the TV and kind of changing everything up, it was just like, oh man, where is everything going to go? So I did the first part. Now it's like I'll give it a few weeks and I'll do the second part later. All
Yeah.
right. All right. Well, I'm excited to get into this lore card this week and not for ulterior motives to bring up something that I'm personally excited about. Absolutely not. So how about
Don't
we
believe you.
we get started on this week's lore card?
Okay. I've
Brought to
actually,
you, oh, sorry.
yeah. Go, no, go ahead.
Brought to you from Destiny Armory Defined, our weekly lore card.
Yeah, so I've actually done this one a couple of times in the past. It's old school, man. D1, Destiny 1,
They had a good
Destiny
style back
1.
then. I want them to
They
tap
did.
back into it.
This is what I call the Tusken Raider helmet. Doesn't it
Tusken Raider?
look like a Star Wars Tusken Raider?
I
Sort
don't
of.
know Star Wars.
Well, you know, that little mouthpiece part is what reminds me of it. Or like a bucktooth beaver. You know,
I'm looking it up. Oh, those fucking guys?
yeah, the mouthpiece. Look at it. It's kind of got that weird thing.
Yeah, you know what? You're not wrong. It does.
Yeah.
I don't have a
Oh.
free feature, otherwise I'd put it up on screen.
Word. So, I will. I'm gonna say this because this set is. This armor set for me, it's everything. And I say that because the different pieces of armor in this set have all had that moment in where it just keeps coming up over and over and over and over and over and over. There's like if it's the arms, it's if it's not the arms, it's the chest. If it's not the chest, it's the boots. If it's not the boots, it's the freaking helmet. But they all just come up over and over and over again. One, for the simple fact it's symmetry, and we all know, well, I say that a lot of us know that symmetry is the faction that Ulan Tan or Ulan Tong was in charge of, you know, and they considered his thoughts on the darkness somewhat heretical, I think is how they said it. And he was the first one to really say that the darkness and the light were not really opposing forces, and you needed to embrace both of them in order to, you know, survive. I don't want to say win because that's a bad thing to think of. I want to say survive. So you really have to embrace both because the later we got in D2 some sets that were tied to Ulan Tan, which were the Symmetrists, and they basically, you know, like reiterated the fact that if we really want to win or succeed at the end of the game, we would have to abandon all of our light, pretty much give up everything that we have, because there's no way of winning without giving up everything. And so that goes back to sacrifice. That goes back to all of the central things that I believe Destiny is about. They really drive home a lot. They drive home the idea a lot about sacrifice in this game. They just do a really good job of veiling it in other ways. And so, like, great moments in the Destiny timeline, history, whatever you want to call it, folklore behind Destiny, great moments are all centrally tied to sacrifices or giving up oneself in a great way, and therefore tapping into the other side or creating a new you know, path forward for Guardians. And then there's that whole Thanatonaut, you know, thing, which that's tied to these sets. So first we have Thanatonauts are in the set. Then we have an Easter egg in one of these pieces that talks about the Dreaming City, pretty much. But it also could just be talking about Ahamkara altogether. And there's the mention of a grave or a fortress, you know, that's being guarded by a dragon in a Dreaming City, pretty much. So these are all things that were planted in this armor set, obviously, years before any of this stuff was ever written in game. And so Symmetry Fang for me has always been this armor set that keeps coming back, keeps coming back. I'm sorry, Symmetry Fang and Monolith Bleed. I'm comparing the two. Sorry, Monolith Bleed is the other one that keeps coming back. So Monolith Bleed and Symmetry Fang are the two that keep coming back. So let me, there's two sets.
We're talking about the symmetry.
But we're talking about Symmetry Fang. Okay. So in this particular helmet, it's Ulan Tan. That's why it always gets me mudded up in history, is because Ulan Tan is everywhere.
Yeah.
Anyway,
Very, very influential post gameplay figure in Destiny. Like that's
yeah.
I feel like we've said this before, but that's what a lot of the like flavor text was supposed to be. Like when you read about like Dredgen Yor and Jaren Ward and Ulan Tan and Tolin and Osiris, it was never meant to be, and these are the people that we're gonna be helping. It was meant to be, and these are the people, like, we're standing on the shoulders of giants type of thing, you know. They did their thing, they're gone now. Now it's your turn. You're gonna do the thing. Of course, the community had other desires, and Bungie just was like, all right, yeah, here's Osiris, here's Saint 14, you're never gonna meet Jaren Ward, you know, Dredgen Yor is dead.
Right, exactly, yeah, and so I bring up Symmetry Fang and Monolith Bleed because they are somewhat related to one another, but for a reason that goes deep, and this is like one of those really deep cuts. So we know about Thanatonauts, and we know about Ulan Tan's burial site on whatever, or you know, memorial site, whatever you want to call it, the freaking on Io, Ulan Tan's grove. It's like this, for lack of a better word, it's kind of like this monumental place to basically honor Ulan Tan, who's no longer here. But in D1, he had very like specific pieces that were tied to him, and one of them was his burial ring, which has the icon on it that you find on this is where it goes deep. The icon on the ring goes in line with the alchemist raiment, which is a exotic set of robes, and the alchemist raiment on the front of it has this big emblem. And then alchemist, obviously, go deep with that, but there's another. So the alchemist raiment and that ring and the Thanatonauts lullaby, which was like an artifact that didn't do anything back in D1. It's a book and it has the same emblem on it. And so that's where all of this gets tied together, because we have a Thanatonaut using a book in whatever capacity. It's called a lullaby. Who knows what that means? There's a song with that, I'm sure. And then you have Ulan Tan being not here anymore. And then you have this other thing of the Thanatonauts, which most of us know the Thanatonauts were the ones that were trying to figure out, they were trying to unlock the memories that were lost to us. The game is all about basically waking up in this post-apocalyptic world, not knowing what happened before. And in an early Destiny folklore, these Thanatonauts would, or you know, to define it, death navigators would they would basically shoot themselves and try to unlock the memories from the past by being revived by their ghost. And there's a famous grimoire that goes with that, where this Thanatonaut's doing it over and over again. And there's this whole string of syntax, which later comes up now with all kinds of cool stuff. And it can even be tied to Exos. It can even be tied to the damn Praxic warlocks and the scientists that are experimenting on all kinds of weird tech. So this stuff goes deep, 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 deep. So if you ever find yourself in a place where you want to like go to a rabbit hole that spreads all over like a spider web, just look up Ulan Tan and try to navigate all that mess. Okay. But that's where the root of a lot of stuff comes from in this game is these perspectives from characters that may or may not have done what they did or existed at all, or maybe they're still around in some capacity and we just don't know it. And so that's what always has been the mystery for me. Like, what the hell happened to Ulan Tan? And what the hell did all of this mean with him? And why the heck did he have a faction called Symmetry in the first place? And what was he really trying to tell everybody? That whether you decide he's the hero now because we've adopted the darkness powers, or if you still think he's somewhat heretical, it's kind of like this position that really hasn't been defined in game yet. And I think when Destiny comes to a close, it'll make a lot more sense. Because there are examples of people going down a path that may have been very unfortunate, or what people would consider the wrong path, like Tolan, the early years for Osiris, all these cautionary tales for different particular light bearers that went down a madness hole and ended up being imprisoned by their own obsession or whatever, seeking this knowledge. And that's what is at the root of this whole game, is trying to understand everything around you, that deep, insatiable hunger for knowledge, and knowing what happened before. Where did we come from? Or what is the whole point? And so this is one of those armor sets, and Monolith Bleed is the other armor set, and there are a couple more that all just do this every single time. But this one is specifically tied to the Crucible, and it kind of goes in line with like the whole symmetry philosophy, which is really cool. And this one is, if you relate it to the Thanatonauts, this one makes sense, because how does a crucible match, kind of go on, right? So you kind of think, like, how did Crucible come to be? Well, it was this idea of just, basically killing each other and reviving each other. Well, that's what the Thanatonauts did, and that's what early Ikora did, and she was, known for this bat being this badass in the Crucible. So going into this particular armor set,
Well,
now we get to, go ahead.
really quick, and I'll pull off the armor set. I probably should have done that because we were just doing an Ulan Tan bit. Before we get into it, just one more thing about Ulan Tan, because talking about it makes me think about it, and thinking about it reminded me of something. And I was like, wait a second, let me see if I can find this. And I did find it. So, excerpts from Ulan Tan. This is from the Solstice Bond, Majestic, that we got in Season of Arrivals. So this should be a direct quote from him, where he says, and this first part is like, just kind of like the core of the faction Symmetry's belief and his belief. Light cannot exist without darkness. They are a bonded pair. They beget each other in eternal symmetry. They are as one. So like that's just kind of like the main belief of them. But then he goes on to say, if we claim knowledge from Sister Light, then we must also claim knowledge from Brother Dark. The Traveler shares only half of life. Darkness provides the rest. We must know the dark to know ourselves. We must balance or perish. And so two things. This is what got him dealt with, potentially ganked by the FBI, the Vanguard. My bad. Wrong universe there. But it makes you kind of wonder, did he actually like learn how to wield some dark powers like way back then, and they were like, and got
Right.
rid of him?
And
But
shut him down, maybe.
yeah, and if he did, darkness provides the rest. We must know the dark to know ourselves. So through Thanatonautics, like you said, it's trying to pull the memories from our past lives to like get that like retrospective look of who we used to be, the memories, maybe there's value in it, charting death, all that. And we now know that this is even before we knew. This is from Season of Arrivals. So like Beyond Light, Witch Queen, Lightfall, we now know that darkness actually does hold like these keys to our past consciousnesses. And that's why like
Yes.
Crow remembers everything that Aldrin did now because of what Savathun did to him using dark power. And
Yes.
so it really makes it sound like Ulantan had actually been using darkness and he remembers like who he was previously.
Yeah. And that's the scary thing because, like they said about, the veil containment, and how
That's
it's,
a good example.
basically. Yeah, how it's basically unlocking the hidden memories, like this is all stored somewhere out there in the cosmos, in the fabric. And without going off on a tangent, just to summarize one of my little theories is, like we've said on this show before, we're inside of a pocket universe and we are pulling in and out of existence from other pocket universes that are all. And I can't say parallel timelines because timeline is a time makes no, it's no, it doesn't matter. It doesn't, it's inconsequential. Sorry. I didn't mean to derail my own dumb derailing thought, but we're in a pocket universe. We're pulling in and out from other pocket universes, and that's our paracausal ability. And so we've been locked inside this bubble, basically, of our soul system slash universe and what we know about our known universe. So whenever our ghost, brings us back from where, right? It maybe it's another pocket universe that we were existing in, and here we are now, And so all of these little things that are said in game that are just like these little sprinkly glitter hints as to what happened and how we're here in the first place, we may or may not consciously be in control of what's going on. We're just trying to navigate how to get the hell out of this prison of sorts. And it's like Ulantan says, it's a balance. You're on a teeter-totter as you're going forward. And too much dark, ooh, bad. Too much light, ooh, bad. That kind of thing. So you gotta like balance on this big, I don't know, skateboard flying through the solar system. And that goes back in line with the whole idea if this is all a simulation, or are we really a product of, Vex manipulation, or is this something else that the Vex are using to create this pocket universe, or do they even have anything to do with it in the first place, and they're just another, byproduct of something bigger, right?
Yeah.
Ahamkara, like all of these weird things that happen.
I was gonna say it'd be really crazy if after Final Shape we learned that everything in Destiny is actually just a video game.
Yeah, I
This
still
fucking
think it would
Truman
be
Show that, it's like, oh
yeah.
my God, we're just a video game.
Wouldn't it be funny if like you woke up and in game and then it was like you?
Oh, well, it's funny that you say that. Let's get on with your flow state,
Okay, that's fair.
and
All
then
right.
we'll.
All right. All right, here we go. Dude, that was like, okay. So I'm sorry. I just completely just like went off on a tangent. But that's where
Ulantan is
my
banned from this show.
Exactly. See, that's what happens. You get banned for talking like this because people just, you sound crazy. He makes you sound crazy. All right. Let's
Symmetry
buckle down.
Fang 6.
Yes. So the flavor text is where this definition comes from, and I thought it was very I thought it was a good thing to bring up again because people are experiencing whatever they want to call it, burnout, fatigue, drought, whatever. People are just in this,
You know, I peeked ahead. Are you telling me to get good?
yeah, GG, bro. So, the people get taught this in college. It's really great because it's always interesting, like the people I find on the internet that are just now figuring out this stuff or had just learned about it, and it's kind of cool. I'm like, wow, cool. So Symmetry Fang, the flavor text on his helmet is, there are six factors in true, and I'm gonna butcher this, but this is how you pronounce his name because I just looked it up. It's Chick Sent Me High E. So it's Chick Sent Me High E. And that's his last name. It's like a bunch of letters. So he's a famous he's really famous for this particular thing. And so there's six factors of Chick Sent Me High E flow. First is the loss of self. Okay, so that's a very like get in the zone type of flavor text in it, and it goes in line with like the whole thamadonot like philosophy of like how to get in there, right? So this is what's cool. So what's so important about that? So he created this thing called flow state. And flow state is defined by this psychologist. His first name is Mihaly. And when in a state of flow, individuals are fully immersed in the task at hand, losing track of time and self-consciousness. Flow occurs when there is a balance between the individual's skill and the challenge presented. Now you kind of see, like, why is that tied to Ulantan? There's a
The
balance,
balance,
right?
yeah, okay.
Yeah. So I feel it's important to kind of point out the somewhat like obvious just because you need to think about it as you're listening because this gets heady sometimes. Anyway, so this was defined by that psychologist. It's a state of optimal experience categorized by intense focus, presence, and enjoyment in an activity. So this leads to a sense of effortless engagement and fulfilling accomplishment. At its core, flow represents a state of heightened focus, intrinsic motivation, and intense enjoyment that arises when individuals are fully engaged in an activity that challenges their skills and abilities. And so there's a bunch of these little diagrams you can look up, but basically it's kind of like a chart that shows where if the challenge is too high or if the skill gap is too far or great in between, you get bored or you're not engaged. And so to strike the perfect flow state, you have to have the right balance of ability meets, challenge. So to better grasp this essence of flow, imagine the feeling of being completely absorbed in a task where time seems to slip away and everything fades into the background. And so this state of effortless concentration and deep immersion categorizes flow. That provides a sense of clarity. So there are things that happen when you're not engaged in flow, or like when I'm droning on about a lore card and you tune out. There are all kinds of things and factors that relate to your enjoyment or, your engagement in something. And one of the things is the challenge too high? Is the challenge too low? Is my ability to meet that challenge too far away, or is it too easy? So, is it too easy? Is it too hard? Is the challenge too high? Is the challenge too low? Those go hand in hand, and they create, if you got this perfect nexus point where you're just popping, you're hitting your ability and you're just popping, 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 everything just goes away and you enter this flow state. It's almost like ethereal. It's almost like meditating and just being somewhere else, not in your body. You're just like in this perfect zone. That's what athletes call it, getting in the zone. And you're just going. You're like, you, all the practice and all the years of working out and whatever are all for this one particular point. But if it gets too hard, you lose interest. If it gets too easy, you lose interest, like destiny.
Destiny's
Or
not
like,
too easy, though, in my that's not what's keeping me out of it.
I know, but like there are certain factors that play into that, right? So like
Yeah.
there's like trials, right? If you suck at trials,
Oh,
you're gonna
okay,
get
yeah,
bored
right
real
there.
fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're
Yeah,
gonna
I
get
suck at
bored real
PvP,
fast.
so I don't go into it. That
See,
I
and that's
get.
funny because this is a PvP set, right?
Oh, it is? That's funny.
Yeah. Well, it's a crucible, yeah, tied
Yeah,
step.
it's 'cause Ulan Tan was fighting for his life at the end there.
Well, I think he was just working with some really interesting people.
Oh yeah, 'cause he was the na-na-na. Right. Okay, continue. No more Ulan Tan.
Sorry. So a real world example of flow can be found in, you know, all these activities. Like I said, musicians getting lost in their rhythm, writer engrossed in their creative process, an athlete in the zone, perfect executing complex movements, you know, those types of things.
Yeah.
This is when you're
Actually,
operating at your, yeah, go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm gonna put up the previous image again that you had. I don't know if you're following along. This one that has the anxiety boredom for anyone listening. So it's a chart where the flow channel is like a diagonal going up from the bottom left to the top right, and then above it is anxiety and beneath it is boredom. And you saying this like flow state, a musician lost in the rhythm of a captivating performance, a writer engrossed in the creative process of crafting a novel. Like when I'm reading, I was like at work the other week, I was like rereading one of my favorite comics, and it was just like at this point where the stakes were really high, so I wasn't bored, but they weren't like so dreadful that it was like really giving me anxiety. And it was that's where it really was. I was in that flow state, and I'm this reading, and I'm completely distracted about getting back to work. Like my break is over, but I just kept reading for like 3 5 minutes after because I was just like, oh my God, I love this part. I'm just like so amped on this part that it just like hit that like it hit that flow state.
It happens, and we're not aware of it a lot of times. You know, there's really cool like flow models that kind of explain it too. Like
Yeah.
this doesn't just mean like, you know, physical engagement. This is mental
No.
engagement as
Yeah.
well. So like there are like all kinds of things that are, you know, tied to your human experience that create this flow state. And it's neat that it's this set is tied to warlocks because they're really interested in figuring out the knowledge. You know, they're the book thumpers, you know, the floofers that are trying to understand where all this reality came from. And so it's interesting that like some of the m most high-minded concepts come from warlock sets or warlock pieces. And so this one is very mental in the head. It's very heady sometimes. But what's cool is like there are different flow states, and you can't just be in a state of flow all the time. That's not going to work, right? So this is only when you're operating at a peak potential. It's where you experience your harmonious alignment with between your skill and your challenge. And flow can also be manifested in everyday experiences, like, you know, like you said, you know, reading a comic book or cooking a gourmet meal or solving a complex puzzle or engaging in video games. You know, that's the most like tangible for Destiny Universe is being able to play a video game and have enjoyment of that. So I summed it all up by pretty much saying that flow state is really kind of key when you're seeking out activities that strike the right balance between skill level and challenge. It enables individuals to enter this state of flow and derive some sense of intrinsic reward or satisfaction, right? And so this is just like a long, convoluted way to say, you know, when something is fun or enjoyable or it keeps you engaged, it's because it taps into your flow state. So whatever that is, it taps into your flow state. And then eventually you can either it could just not do that anymore for you because you've, whatever, you've lost it, or you've moved on, or it's just at an ebb and flow. So here we are at Destiny in an ebb and flow. A lot of people are, just kind of waiting for the next big thing because that's what they're engaged.
I also feel like I went really hard on Season of the Witch and just
Yeah, me too.
really hard on Season of the Witch into Season of the Wish, and it was just like more formulaic content, and I was like, I just need to shake up.
Yeah. I
I'm
think
really
for
excited for
lore
the
people,
episodes. Sorry.
me too. I think for lore people, we were probably like the best writing so far this year was Season of the Deep, just because it had some good, obviously the Witness, it told us where the hell that came from. So that was pretty good. And then of course, obviously, Savathun's plot line was good before that.
So the last image I just had up, and I'm just going to derail this just for a second to talk about another one of my favorite comics. I actually have its wonderful hardcover right here. It's called Die, and it's just like you said before, waking up in Destiny as your character. A group of friends go to play their tabletop RPG, and wouldn't you know it, they get transported into the world they were playing in as these new
Oh
characters.
shit. Wow.
And one of the characters plays a class. No, this is a real RPG as well. You can actually play all unique classes, and one of them plays a class called an Emotion Knight. And when I saw, I'll put this first one up. When I saw this one with like arousal, flow, control, relaxation, boredom, apathy, worry, anxiety, with these color spread, I immediately thought of the Emotion Knight chart, where it's like each emotion, so like grief, loathing, rage, vigilance, ecstasy, admiration, terror, amazement, although I think it was called anger, but unimportant.
Right.
There was a weapon that you would use as that emotion knight, and the more you felt that emotion, so like
What?
if you were just in remorse, you weren't
Yeah.
really doing it, but if you were in like deep in loathing, like your fucking weapon is prime and you're killing everything.
What?
And so it's like it was just a really cool thing to see similarities.
Okay, new subclass confirmed.
Right? How cool would that be though?
Imagine in Destiny, like the last subclass they give us is tied to your emotions,
Well,
and
I
it
mean,
unlocks all these different spectrums of light
and I mean that. No, it'd be spectrums of dark.
or dark. Yeah,
Because
wow.
that's what I was gonna say. I was gonna say, like, what if there is this like Ulan's hands talking about that, and you're relating it to flow state, and I think it makes a lot of sense that you're relating it to flow
Sure.
state. What if the final darkness subclass is kind of like, obviously it's not gonna be like my character's happy, so I'm, but it, like they do it in like
Emotion,
an
though,
interesting way. Yeah, they would play with the concept of like strong emotions, because that's what Strand and Stasis are already. Stasis is about control, and Strand is about the release of control. And it's like, is the third one not gonna be a balance, right? You
Interesting,
have
interesting.
control, you have release of control, and then you have the flow between.
Yeah. Wow. That's cool.
Really good book by Kieran. I got it right here. Let me.
Kieran.
Kieran Gillen.
I don't speak French, but I've read Les Thanatonauts, and it's a really good book. It's by Bernard Weber Shaw, and he is really the one person who coined the whole entire phrase Thanatonauts. Like, that didn't exist until he really kind of coined it. So
So someone
Thanatonauts,
outside of Destiny coined the phrase Thanatonaut?
he's a writer, he's a sci-fi writer, and he's really kind of like, he's really good. He's French, and they even have some comics. I have, well, I'll show it on Twitter one day, but I have his, they made a, what the hell do you call it? the hard book comics, what are they called? Graphic novel. He did a bunch of little ones, and they're all tied to the book. Anyway, to summarize, Thanatonauts is a book. Les Thanatonauts is a French book, and it talks about navigating death. And it all stems from these kids that had a near death experience, kind of like Flatliners, if you've ever watched that movie.
I
So
haven't, but
he has a near death experience where he gets hit or whatever, and he sees like the other side, and something was pulling him forward. And years later, his friend from those years who he did everything with, they kind of separated because of that life-changing event. And then years later, they end up merging, and he's like, "Where you been up to all these years?" And he's like, "Dude, come to my lair, basically, right?" And so he just shows him, "I've been working on this theory, you know, that we can navigate the other side, or you know, the great." And here's another thing that goes into Destiny: the unknown country is what they called it, which is a ornament for No Land Beyond. And so unknown country is what you call the great beyond, and they called it New Australia. So like the other side of life, which is death on the other side, is the continent. They called it the continent of New Australia. And so
Continent of
it
New
was like,
Australia.
so they have to die in order to go navigate it, and they can't be there for very long, otherwise, you know, they're dead. So they have to keep reviving each other, just like in Flatliners. You go for a minute, you go for 2 minutes, you go for 3 minutes, you go for 5 minutes. Oh shit, you're pushing it too far. So they get other people involved. It gets really crazy. There's a whole bunch of other characters that get introduced. And every like so many chapters, they start a chapter with like this weird fact that came from history. It's almost like these chapters start off with the flavor text, which just have
That's
these weird, weird, random things that he used to do as a kid when he would research, like trying to understand, you know, Egyptian stuff. Anyway.
I really like things like that though, because it's obvious. We have many cases, examples of how Bungie's writers wanted to make this game kind of exist in like a world that kind of like mirrors our own, but it takes the fiction and kind of pulls it forward. And so I wouldn't be surprised to learn that a writer read that book and liked that theory about exploring death, and they're like, that's something a warlock would do, because they can flatline again and again and again without any real risk. And they're like, yeah, let's capitalize on that.
Yeah, it's really cool. And so like that whole idea of Thanatonauts in game and stuff like that really kind of stems from that sci-fi writing from Bernard, you know, Weber. And he it's messed up because it's in French, so like you can't find an English translated version. You just kind of have to go get the French one and translate it, or there's a
Oh,
couple
really?
sites out there that have it. Yeah, and so I found it one time. And so some of the terms are a little bit weird because, you know, there's a male and female version of certain like words. You know, there's a feminine and masculine, yeah, in
Yeah, like
French, and that's
all statues are
all Latin.
female.
Yeah. So some things you might read and go, huh? But once you get past that, you start to understand what's going on. Anyway, it could have been translated a little bit better. Maybe somebody will, if they ever do it. I'll be the first one in line to buy the book, just so I can put it on the shelf.
Yeah, no, it sounds really cool.
It's a good book.
I'm gonna look into that more after the show as well. So with our lore cards done and our side tracking done, let's get into this lore book that came out this season. Baffling that it's still not in the API. We got it here. We're gonna read it.
I love it. I
Yeah,
love this lore book.
this is my first
It's
time reading it, so.
this is going to be so great. It's short
So,
enough,
yeah,
but yeah,
I
it's going to
hope
be
it's short
great.
enough that we can just kind of go through it, because it's only six entries. And I noticed it's four of them are called like da 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 tale, and the first and last are Valis Forge's prologue and epilogue. So it's like, just based on that, I'm just like, I wonder what this could be about, like just this going in it. So I'll start off. We're just gonna read this and we'll give our commentary after every entry, like we've been doing lately. I like this format. I think it's a little more fun.
Yeah, it's good.
We need not see these local administrations as challenges to the Empress's rule, Councillor Tarun said to the assembled War Council. In truth, they may be keeping the whole fleet from descending into anarchy. I don't give a war beast's turd if they are, sneered Valis Thrag. This is treason. We should dispatch a legion to establish order. A murmur of agreement bubbled up from the assembled Cabal commanders. Empress Keitel regarded the handful of holographic blips hanging over the council table. They represented refugees from her sundered homeworld, adrift on massive starships in deep space. That remainder of the remain. My God, I'm sorry. I'm usually better than this. My eyes are just like going crazy today. I need to get glasses. The remainder of their entire civilization reduced to digital specks. And what say you, Valis Saladin? The Empress asked. We have a saying on Earth, the Iron Lord replied. There are two ways to move a war beast: with a chunk of flesh or with your fist. The situation calls for both. The assorted commanders grunted in assent. So it shall be, the Empress declared. Tarun, dispatch a shipment of goods immediately with all luxuries included. If conversation of resources is the pretext for their authority, let us remove it. Valis Thrag, she continued, you shall be my fist. Send an echelon of guards to the shipment from fallen raiders. Reassert my authority in un no uncertain terms. The Empress stamped her foot lightly on the ship's deck. The matter was settled. Very well, Tarun said. Our next item is. The counselor stopped mid-sentence, interrupted by a pleasant ringing octave that seemed to come from inside her own head. Everyone in the council perked up. They heard it too. They turned their attention to the closed doorway. Optus Corix, the emperor said, her voice laced with concern. Come in. The telepathic tone dissipated. The scion entered, her lone eye unshielded by a helmet. Gradually, a series of images bloomed in the council's imagination. The Witness, Portal, Savathun, Eris Morn, Wishing Wall, Spire, Eggs, Ahamkara, Riven. Riven. The room was gripped by tense silence. Keitel had avoided bringing up the Witness thus far because, despite their best efforts, the Cabal were helpless to breach the portal. The Empress knew that the resulting feeling of impotence made her commanders rash. They were ill accustomed to dread. At least now they had a path forward. The Vanguard has a habit of playing with forces they cannot hope to control, Counselor Tharek muttered. The fact that we're resurrecting the Ahamkara at all is proof they can be controlled, Saladin replied coolly, or at least eliminated. Ah, yes, the Emperor said, your famed great hunt. If I recall the Mythkeeper Atsha's lessons, you were integral to their execution. Is that not so? It is, Saladin replied with reluctance. The Ahamkara were deemed too dangerous to live, so we killed them. Valis Thrag suggested impatiently. The Cabal would have done the same. You would have tried, Saladin fired back sternly, and failed. Among the Cabal, and only scions truly understand the anthem and the theme. Among the Cabal, only the scions truly understand the anthem and the theme. The rest of you would have ended up in prisons of your own making. There is nothing the Cabal cannot conquer with or without the scions, Keitel shot back. You would do well to remember that, Lord Saladin. Saladin weighed his strategic position. Of course, Empress, he deferred. My apologies. Keitel pushed forward. Tell us some of the tales of these wish dragons. We would be wise to study our foe. Saladin sighed inwardly. This was not a period of history, he gladly recounted. As you wish. Interesting. So, one thing that I noticed that I'm just going to do a quick search for. On Ishtar here.
Yeah.
Okay, so there has been another Optus. There's only been a single Optus mentioned before, Guardian fights multiple Cabal, including Optus Haxat, as part of the Proving Ground missions from Season of the Splicer.
Oh, okay. Is it like there's just one Optus appointed per leader, or like in time, moment
That's
in time, or
what I was wondering.
kind of
I
like
was
a...
like, what I was wondering what kind of rank Optus would be, and it's
Well,
probably.
it seems to suggest that because I think in real life the Optus is like the main, it's like a speaker. it's like the main dude.
The second largest wireless carrier in Australia. Oh, that can't be right.
In the world.
It is a
No.
telecommunication company based in Australia. Obviously, that's not the one that we're trying to talk about. It means to choose or to decide. Interesting.
Interesting. Huh.
Well,
This came up a long time ago. I remember this came up a long time ago, like what, like the rank and file of cabals and scions and whatnot. I remember somebody digesting it all, or I mean dissecting it all.
Because like we have, I think going up, it's like when you just have like your regular like soldiers, but then you have your titled ones. It goes like Bracchus, Bracchus Val, Valis, Primus. And I think that's it. Then Dominus slash Emperor slash Empress. Dominus being specific to Dominus Gaul, because while he held the equivalent title of Emperor, he was not actually viewed as Emperor.
Right, because he was a bloodline. I mean, he was the adopted albino, cabal
And I mean,
baby.
I'm sure there were some that viewed him as an emperor, just not everyone did. So I guess it's an all or
Yeah,
nothing type of thing.
maybe.
What was the other guy? What was the guy that Gaul killed? What was his rank?
Oh, he was his, oh
Consul.
God. Yes, consul. The consul.
Which sounds like a side rank, which I imagine Optus also is. Like they don't
Which
really have.
make sense. It would make sense because, like, if you're not directly tied to the bloodline or in a Dominus capacity, which is parallel, you have a leader alongside with you who is basically calling the shots. It's kind of like, your vice president or whatever, but they can rise and fall or they can step in and laterally move. So, to like every massive top of the food chain leader, there is the military equivalent of the top, right? So I think that's what the consul represented. Fun fact, the consul had pieces of the like dead ghosts attached to his chest piece, and the helmet. What was it called? The spider eyes helmet. So it was it was the helmet, hunter helmet with all the eyes over it. Actually, God dang it, arachnid something or other. So somewhere along the
I
line,
know
you,
the one you mean. I cannot remember what it's called.
ATS arachnid, is that it?
Yeah, ATS
Yeah,
Arachnid.
okay.
That's
He
it.
had ATS arachnid on his chest, almost as if to imply he had killed Dr. Crispy.
I don't know who that is.
From the Taken King trailer, which is
Oh.
which is the
The
guy
Taken King
that
trailer.
was,
Didn't that come out in Dark Below?
oh, I mean Dark Below trailer, yeah, Dark
Oh,
Below
okay.
trailer,
Yeah,
Dr.
because he
Crispy,
was the
who
one that
brought,
was all hyping up Dragon's Breath for some
yeah,
reason.
Dragon's Breath, ATS Arachnid, and Radiant Dance Machines, and is most likely Pete Davidson.
All right. Well, would you like to read the next entry? I
Yes,
don't know how to
yes.
respond to
Okay.
that.
I know. There is no response to it. It's just there. So anyway.
Iron Lord's Tale.
So the Iron Lord's Tale. Oh, I really like this one. This is where it got good for me. This was the second week, and I was like, oh, shite. All right.
Okay.
So Lord Timur, 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 however you want to pronounce it, wades forward into the shallow pool that rings the Islet. Listening attentively to the rhythmic lapping of the water. There's a gentle artifice at work here. Each step he takes, however clumsy, stirs a repeating, too perfect echo of the same small noise. A recording or an isolated memory. A mimetic transmission cued to overwrite every other sound in the vicinity. Sorry, my voice is all cracking and stuff because I've been ex allergies and all that junk.
You're
So
fine.
I'm going to butcher it, but here we go. He wonders if the last poor villager to come this way wished for peace and quiet. The sound starts again. Timur turns. The Ahamkara lunges at him from the side, its glistening bulk emerging from the span of water too shallow to have ever contained it. Through a shower of black-green liquid, Timur sees its wing-shaped maw split open like a flower. Into all that displaced pond water, Timur summons void, a raw cativation of bubbles burst along the underside of the Ahamkara in a cascading shockwave of pale violet fire. It unseams the Ahamkara at the joint, and Timur's lungs nearly cave in. What's left of the Ahamkara crawls to the edge of the islet, panting raggedly. Timur bends to slap once again, experimentally, at the surface of the lake. He hears the alarm call of a bird from deeper in the trees. Closer by, he hears Lord Collivance call his name. Timur wades closer to the Ahamkara. Don't you want to know if you're right? The dragon snickers even as it dies. Don't you want to know? Don't you want to ask me about Clovis Bray? Don't you want to know? He resents the question. I know I'm right, Timur says, but he doesn't want to know. He wants to ask, and badly. He wants, during the entire time he waits for the creature to expire, by the end, he has to bite down on his tongue. He is seated on the bank, tipping sludge out of his boots, when Lord Calavance catches up with him. I called out to you, Lord Calavance said. His student sounds equal parts apologetic and sullen. Perhaps he wanted to fell the beast himself. I know, Lord Timur replies. I had it handled. He lets fondness warm his tone. He tells Collivance to tell the village that their great beast has been slain and bask in the gratitude that follows. Timur's mind is already somewhere elsewhere. There is so much more important work to return to, a future to construct. Let Nerwin and Ilk, obsess over their bestiaries. Did you talk to it? Lord Collivance said. It mentioned Clovis Bray, Timur says. The taste of copper filled his mouth. No. They walk back in silence. I butchered it. Hopefully, I can follow. But you see how he had to keep himself from saying anything while dealing with the
Yeah.
Ahamkara?
Yeah, you can't open
Because
that
if he
door because that's how they
accidentally,
operate.
if he accidentally wishes or conveys a desire, and he was restraining himself so much that he had to bite down on his tongue just to keep from saying anything. Like, that's the will that an Ahamkara has over you. Even in their dying, they're wanting you to kill them because
Yeah.
in that dying moment, you're gonna unleash hell, basically. It's cool that they put the call outs for different, Iron Lords from, or Iron Wolves, or Iron Lords and Iron
They're the same
Wolves.
thing. Don't get me started on that. They're the same damn
Yeah, I
thing.
know. Yeah, I know. So Collivance was one. Nerwin was one. They were
Yes.
so Timur. If you don't already know, Timur was a massive warlock figure who basically trained a lot of other warlocks and guardians and whatnot.
Trained Osiris, right?
Most famously Osiris, or worked with Osiris alongside him, or trained him, or something.
Yeah, I mean, it was a mentor for a time. It's hard to be a mentor when you're immortal because it's just like, hey, I've existed for 5 years and you've existed for 1 year, so I'm gonna teach you how to do things. And then it's like, all right, we've now both existed for 100 years. You're not exactly my mentor anymore.
Timur is one of those cool figures because Timur was there at the moment when he figured out Fellwinter was the Warmind,
Yeah.
or Yeah, and he called him out on it. And they were look. Timur is also partly responsible for finding Siva, and so it's funny to me because, like, if we went really far back, where did it all really go wrong, right? Because like if you think about like wishes and interpretations as to how Ahamkara predicts your desires and manifests your reality around you based on what you want.
So let me ask you, the Amkara says, "Don't you want to know if you're right?" The dragon snickers even as it dies. "Don't you want to ask me about Clovis Bray? Don't you want to know?" And Timur says, "I know I'm right, but he does want to know. He wants to ask, and badly. He wants during the entire time he waits for the creature to expire, blah, 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 blah." What do you think it is that he wants to know? And he's saying, "I know I'm right to."
Where Exos came from and stuff like that, like all the idea behind Exos and stuff like that, probably. Or
But like, not a
darkness.
generalization. No, because it has to be related to Clovis Bray, right? So not a generalization of a question. Do you have like a
Oh
question?
no, if you're going deep, I already know the answer. So if you're going deep, he wants to know like the central point
Well, no,
of knowledge, like why we lost it all.
let me phrase it like this. Let's play pretend. You're Timur, I'm the Ahamkara. What's the
Sure.
question?
What
Ask
the
the
fuck
question.
happened? What the fuck happened? I need to know. I need the knowledge of what, where, why we're here, where it all came from.
And
I think
that
that's,
don't you want to ask me about Clovis Bray?
because he had a part in that. He was part of it.
What do you mean he was part of it?
Well, as we learned, as far as Clovis Bray's, dip into madness, he was being led down this road by, forces of the
Oh,
darkness.
sorry.
Because remember, everything that he did eventually got him the result he wanted, which was, clarity control, which was basically,
Okay, so
using the darkness.
are you saying his question would be did Clovis Bray create Exos using darkness?
Or maybe something just more generalized and deeper, because I don't think at that point Timur maybe would have had all of that information.
But see, that's what I mean.
Just,
That's why that's why this bugs me, that the
yeah.
Ahamkara says, "Don't you want to know if you're right?" Meaning Timur has like an exact question, a yes or no question that can be answered by the Ahamkara about Clovis Bray. What is that yes or no question? That's why I was trying to say, not like a generalization, like what is the answer to everything? It's an A or B, you know?
I don't know. I don't know. It makes me wonder if like the whole reason why the Ahamkara are here in the first place was because of the witness, or the byproduct that created the witness, the splitting of the worms across the universe.
I mean, assuming Ahamkara are worms, I don't think they are. I think that's pretty been concreted
Well, I
to
know,
not
but
be.
like of that breed, somewhat, some way,
Well,
somehow,
it's
some
just another creature
deeper.
that learned how to harvest the Anthemana theme.
Yeah,
Theoretically,
exactly.
anything
So
could.
the creatures of the Anthemana theme, let's put it that way.
Well, yeah, because here's I think the most important distinction between Ahamkara and worms. Ahamkara, aside from the fact that they don't actually even look the same, if we assume based on how this Ahamkara that Timur fought looks exactly like Riven did, assuming that's like their true shape, Ahamkara don't look like worms, as we've seen Zol, as we've seen Zeta, as we've seen worm larva, as we've seen in cutscenes, all of the worm gods, and also Ahamkara can shapeshift. So it's two independent creatures.
Sure, I get that. I get that. I'm not saying that they're derived from worms. I'm just saying they are of the proto species that maybe came to be Ahamkara, and the worms came from that. Yeah, so like whatever that was, I mean,
Okay.
we got a freaking whale, you know, that we that was helping us that looks totally different too, but
Yeah.
you know, that's of the proto species that came. So all I'm saying is at some point there was some kind of you know, species that was
Yeah.
just like spread out, and
Yeah,
there they are.
because it you have to think about it like that, where it's like we're dealing with like the entire universe. So what you're
Yeah.
saying is that Ahamkara and worms originate from the same planet, so like they actually have a shared ancestor.
Yeah, or I wouldn't even go as far to say planet. I just would
Well, I
say
mean, if
like
not, how?
source, but yeah. Well,
Oh,
source,
yeah.
like, you know, whatever central point that was that brought them here, right? So
Yeah.
like whether that be a wormhole or a black hole or just popped into existence because something else came through it, you know, whatever. I don't want to get like too stupid about it, but like just basically the same origin point. And what really is, so this is what's really always been fascinating to me about Ahamkara versus worms is Ahamkara seem to be much more engaged with light bearers, whereas worms were engaged with the particular race that was wrapped around the what we consider the darkness. And so they're very mirror of one another because, but here's the funny thing, worms are internal, Ahamkara are external, light, dark, light, dark, two contrasting views. So it's almost like our involvement with the Ahamkara is very similar, or I say mirrors the engagement that the hive have with the worm, because the worm ingests the hive ingests the worm and it's internal. The guardian makes a wish which is external and manifests through reality like an Ahamkara makes it so. So like these things are one and the same. It's almost like the Faustian bargain just split in two different mirrored ways.
Yeah, no, I don't disagree with the point you're making there. It's just you made me consider something that I think is interesting. You're kind of proposing, at least it sounds like, you're proposing that Ahamkara and worms just kind of like poofed into existence. But I'm taking like the like literal like evolutionary standpoint of it, where it's like whether they were incepted on the same like through evolution on the same planet from a shared ancestor, or if that shared ancestor was of a planet-faring creature, you know, like it, say there was a creature and it had its race on this planet, and then it left, the same species left to another planet, and so they evolved independently. So technically, not from the same planet, but from the same shared ancestor. I think that's really interesting, and
Yeah,
I
no, that's a good point. That's a good point. You know, whatever that be,
yeah, and I
you
think
know,
that.
it.
And just to cap this, the thought that I had, I think it would be really interesting, like if there's like a biological component of species that's actually able to feed on the anthemanthetheme, and that's why worms and
Exactly.
Ahamkara can.
Exactly.
And
Now
it's
you're
like,
picking up what I'm putting down.
yeah.
And so that's what really gets to me because I don't feel like guardians just exist because they exist. Because of the traveler, I feel like, you know, there was something that goes in line with all of this that's tied. Obviously, everything's tied together. Everything's, you know, and somewhat connected. But the Ahamkara have very much shown themselves to be still playing with us from day one in since we, you know, woke up, you know, and they're in and around everything that we mess with. So whether we know it or not, we're directly, and I don't want to say the word because it gets me in trouble, but something akin to tithing. So anyway, every time you pick up a weapon and you go and shoot an enemy, you're doing something akin to tithing to your light or to your origin point of light. And ghosts, whether they are aware of it or not, seem to mirror how the witness came to be, which the witness is a mirror opposite of what happened with guardians and the light. That's why I told you a long time ago, it's the many that became the one versus the one that became the many. So the witness is the many that became the one, and we are of the one that became the many, which is light bearers.
Yeah, I
So
really like
that
that.
being, that being manipulated by ghosts. And whether we know it or not, ghosts may or may not have something to do with that same race that the witness is comprised of. And so when we think of things like light and dark aren't opposites, maybe they are of the same origin point. It's just they can never occupy the same exact point or space in time. And so that's why whenever you try to merge them together, the freaking veil gets yeeted across the universe.
You know
It's
what?
like a it's like a magnet.
We got to get back in the book, and I want to offer you to read the next one because I see that it has
Okay.
Albios. But before we do that, these conversations are my favorite that we get to have, and you can only have these conversations. You can't just be like, today we're discussing, like, this,
Yeah.
it's always inspired by, like, we read this and we think this, and that makes us think that, and that make and like we
Yeah.
just like we keep probing deeper from like a random thing. It'd be really cool, and I might bug Baxter about this. It'd be really cool if we could just have like an Ishtar randomizer where it just like pulls like random entries, and we're just like, we're just gonna read 10 random entries and see what the fuck happens. And just
That's
like,
awesome.
especially
Well,
I think it'd be really cool if we invited some other lore nerd guests like
yeah,
Matt,
that'd be
Blue
great.
Crew, things like that, people from
That would,
or Orchid.
yeah, that would be great. Well,
And
because of time, maybe we should do this last one and then do the other ones on the next episode. Just because these are getting big.
yeah, that's a fair point. I was really trying to make it a one episode.
Yeah,
But
I don't
yeah,
think it's going to
I
happen because we got some the second to last one is
it's a
going to do
huge
this
one.
to us
It
again.
is.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah.
All right. Well, then in that case, let
All
me
right.
read this one. I want to read another.
Okay.
So then we have what's going to be our last entry. This is entry number 3 of 6. So we'll do the no next three on the next episode. This is The Hermit's Tale, Warlocks Debate, Hunters Gossip, Titans Share Mission Critical Information. Warlocks deliberate over whether Albios' first life came before or after his resurrection in the light. Did he have 5 lives or 6? Was he awoken, bringing his total to 7? Was he EXO with an uncountable tally before his rebirth in the light? What was the role of his ghost in his lives and deaths? Of the Ahamkara he dealt with. I feel like that's a typo. Sorry if there's any typos. That one feels like a typo. These are the questions heard in hushed voices in the tower's study halls and louder on its practice fields. The hunters talk over the relics of his lives. Where is his lantern now? On blessed Io, with his memorial sunk in the Venusian swamp, secured in a treasure cache. At least 6 hunters have come forward with claims of the lantern's location. None have been authenticated by Albios's surviving acquaintances. The Titans honor his loss as any other diminishment in light, but to those who still remember the Great Hunt, his lives are a warning. Did Albios
Yeah.
make an unwary bargain? Was his light eaten by a wish dragon? Is that Ahamkara still alive, hunting for light bearers? These are questions Albios and his ghosts are no longer able to answer. That's definitely a typo. Those who wear the sign of the lantern bear it in honor of a warlock whose lives touched the light, and as an unfading reminder of the vigilance still required of them. So that's why it's important to have the lore in the fucking API, because that's the only way that you don't get typos like this. And I'm just like, oh, that's not right. There's no chance that's right. And
Yeah,
it
that's okay.
grinds my brain.
Okay, so this whole book is called Dragon Slayers. We're dealing with Ahamkara, obviously, because they're cog dragons. So just for people listening to kind of help, the Albios, people who don't know who Albios is, he's a figure that came up in D1 that we have like picked apart and made stew from his bones. Countless times, and it's one of those other armor sets like Symmetry Fang and like Monolith Bleed that comes up. And so it's funny because in this lore entry, it touches on all the different armor set pieces basically. So one of them, which is the most obvious, is the lantern, is used in honor to, basically honor Albios's last stand in the Great Hunt against this particular Ahamkara that he was dealing with. So there's an armor set, and it's all tied to Albios. You can look it up, but the Five Lives of Albios is basically how we title that. So the Five Lives of Albios speak about the different instances within his five lives dealing with this Ahamkara, and on his last life, the Ahamkara spoke to him. But one of the things that it says in one of the armor pieces is on the flavor text, it says the Five Lives of Albios warlock bond is woven to honor the last stand of Albios. And then the original bond, which was just a blue rare that we got in game in Destiny 1, says that this bond represents the one thing Albios took with him into the swamps, a single lantern. So the lantern is used as an icon to represent Albios, this great warlock who fought in Ahamkara and died in the swamps of Venus, as we learn in this armor set. And he basically had a last stand with an Ahamkara in the swamps of Venus, and he was nothing of him remained underneath basically a willow tree. And so if you've ever looked at like the terrain of Venus, there's these willow trees that are everywhere, and it's pretty cool. And then obviously, like, we get to know about Ahamkara and Venus in the lore as well. So like the for whatever reason, there were like a bunch of Ahamkara on Venus, I guess, or one particular on Venus that people had to fight, or guardians had to fight. But in D1, we didn't know that. In D1, we only had like a little bit of information. And so one of the famous lines was, it wasn't until his fifth life that the Ahamkara spoke to him. By then, it was too late. Too late for what? Right? And then so this particular lore entry is kind of like teasing you because they know you want the answer, but they're not giving it to you. And so it's funny because they mention things from this armor set. Like, was his light eaten by a wish dragon? Is that Ahamkara still alive today, hunting light bearers? These are the questions.
I am really
Did
glad to see an Albios reference. Which one was that? The Hermit's Tale? I am really
Yeah,
glad to
Hermit.
see an Albios reference in this era of Destiny because that's actually really exciting. And he needed it in Season of the Wish because his entire identity is just going to see a fucking Ahamkara and then disappearing. But like
Yeah.
Reading it, so t usually the order when you read things is helmet, arms, chest, legs, class item. I don't think so in this case. I think it would be helmet, chest, arms, legs, just because the arms are where it references. In the chest, it references his fourth life, and in the arms, it references his fifth. So, I think that would be the order.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But so since they're short and since we're cutting the episode in half
Yeah.
here, I just want to dive into this. I'm just going to read these really quick because I'm reading these as you're talking and it bugs me. So all of
Yeah, go for it.
these end with the five lives of Albios. Why a willow tree? It was his only roof. The swamp had consumed everything else. He lived his fourth life in the swamps of Venus beneath, or actually it should be chest helmet. He lived his fourth life in the swamps of Venus beneath the shade of a willow tree. It wasn't until his fifth life that the Ahamkara spoke to him. By then it was too late. Not a trace of him is left, only the swamps of Venus remain. And then Lantern Bond should actually probably be the first. This bond represents the one thing Albios took with him in the swamps, a single lantern. This feels like I'm being lied to.
Well, also remember the reason why they're blue sets is because when they were
Because
making, yeah.
But this feels like I'm being lied to. Let me read it in the order
Okay.
that I meant to read it. I should have read it.
Okay.
This bond represents the one thing Albios took with him into the swamp, a single lantern. And it's like, all right, cool. Obviously, he went with fucking clothes on his back and shit. But the one
Yeah.
actual item he brought with him, aside from his companion ghost, is a lantern. So this guy goes into the woods with just a fucking lantern.
Right,
And it
swamps.
just, yeah, in the swamps with just a lantern. And he, does it actually say it in this? Warlocks debate whether over whether Obios' first life came before or after his resurrection. Did he have five lives or six? Was he awoken with a total of seven? Exo, whatever.
Yeah, EXO is the funny one.
Yeah, another Exo of the Aumkari dealt with. These are the questions hushed. Where is. Yeah, so. At what point did he was his first life and second life and third life? Because it
Right.
sounds like he entered the swamp on his fourth life, because he entered the swamp with only a lantern. He lived his fourth life in the swamps of Venus beneath the
Yep.
shade of a willow tree. And then you go to the helmet, which says, why a willow tree? It was his only roof. The swamp had consumed everything else. And it's like,
Everything
well,
else, yeah.
everything else is just his fucking lantern.
Right.
Right? Like that's what it's
Yeah.
saying. And
Sure.
so then you go to the arms. It wasn't until his fifth life that the Ahamkara spoke to him. By then it was too late. And then the legs, not a trace of him is left. Only the swamps of Venus remain. And it's just
Yeah.
like,
Well, so this is where my head kind of went, like, and like you said on his fourth, like he entered there. So I often
it sounds
imagine
like.
like, I often imagine what did Albius encounter to make him want to go to the swamps of Venus on his fourth life?
Yeah.
Like, did he have a pretty rough go at it? Did he ever want to be a guardian? Did he, or light bearer slash whatever?
Yeah.
Did he figure out something or learn something that made him, so in such a way that he just was like, forget it, I'm just gonna go off to Venus and spend my last remaining, whatever I have in on the swamps, right? And then but basically, could it have been a scenario where he early on encountered an Ahamkara and then realized his fate is doomed no matter what he did, so he re just refused to do anything, and then was like constantly burdened by this whole situation, and then right when he was about to die, the Ahamkara finally spoke to him. So like your mind goes to all these different like things that could have happened.
I don't think
What?
this guy's dead.
Who knows?
That's what I mean. So, Titans, yeah, the Titans honor his loss as any other diminishment in light, but to those who still remember the great hunt, his lives are a warning. So it's like,
Could it be all
so he,
fabricated propaganda, or could he have?
well,
Because they say, it's his last stand. Like, that was it. That's his
yeah,
final
yeah, and
moments.
that's the five lives of Albios woven to honor the last stand of Albios, right? So
Yeah.
here's what it sounds like happened, right? So the Great Hunt is going on. Albios is a warlock, and no one can even remember if he was fucking awoken or Exo in the first place, which is crazy
Right.
to me.
So he's kind of a legend,
Yeah.
like a folklore, like a folktale.
And
Yeah.
so no one even remembers what he looks like in the first place, but everyone remembers, based on the information we have, that he died fighting, and I imagine succeeding in killing, or maybe not even succeeding, maybe it was this one Ahamkara that he tried to
Yeah.
kill five times, and he fought it four times before it fled into the Venusian swamps, where he followed it. And for whatever reason, he followed it with only a lantern. And whatever happened in the swamp, his lantern is gone. He only brought that lantern. So now he only has a willow tree
Yeah.
that I guess he carved his name into it so that you know that he
Something.
only had a willow tree. And he made a last stand with this Ahamkara. And killed the Ahamkara, but in himself also died. And maybe the Ahamkara is still alive, hunting for light
Maybe.
bearers. These are questions Albios and his ghosts are no longer able to answer because he's air quotes dead. What I think happened is this is all propaganda. Albios kept that Ahamkara alive.
Nice.
That's what I think.
That's a good way to end this episode. Find out more next time.
Yeah.
Loose Cannon Podcast.
Find out more when we learn more.
Yeah.
I better not, because we did this last time. I better not read the next entry and find out
No,
evidence
you won't.
that
No, you
Albios. Okay. Yeah. No,
won't. No, you won't.
I think Albios is playing everybody and
Yep.
spun this fucking story. And he saw the great hunt was happening, and he's like, "I got an Ahamkara, buddy. We're getting the fuck out of here. I'll kill
Yeah,
that
look.
one. Don't follow
Yeah, I
me."
got this one, don't worry.
Oh, I died.
Yeah.
You know? Why do they care so much about his fucking lantern? I hate this. I hate Albios. This bugs me. This really bugs me. And I
Bugger.
used to really like Albios. I was like, "Oh wow, that's a really cool story. I wonder what happened." But now I'm looking at it with new eyes today, and it bugs the shit out of me.
Yeah, that's how it goes, though. Ebbs and flow of the
Yeah.
lore community.
Fuck.
Well, on that note.
Yeah, that's going to be it for us this week. If you want to find more of us, we're on Twitter at Loose Cannon Show. Our pinned tweet has everywhere that you can find us. If you came in the middle of the episode and you want to hear more of it, if you want to hear more of our episodes, podcasts, not podcasts, Spotify, Anchor, YouTube, etc., everywhere, we're there. Go
We're
find us.
there.
Our next episode is going to be on March 10th. Yeah. Our next episode is going to be on March 10th, and we're going to continue this lore book. And we hope to see you there. And I'm not going to start waving until I say bye first, because Rhino embarrasses me every week. He leaves me hanging. So,
It first.
bye,
Bye.
everybody. Thank you. I wasn't prepared.